Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak, with Ilan Azulay, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, Bruchim Abayim. Welcome to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak. I'm Ilan Azulay. I'm your host, a spiritual mentor, and a sound therapist for you who are ready to reclaim your power, power back to you, remembering your gifts, remembering all that is here for you. הרי אני מקבל על עצמי את מצוות עשה של ואהבת לרעך כמוך, I hereby accept on myself the due commandment or the utterance of love your friend, your neighbor, your partner, your consultant, your gardener, in the same way that you express love to yourself. And the focus is first on ourselves so we can be filled with the right joy, the joy, the food for our soul. And also if we're dealing with materialistic things, to understand that every materialistic event, every materialistic possibility has a spiritual connotation, a spiritual reasoning for everything. And how we look at everything will change the entire course of our physical existence. So welcome. Today I'm excited to have Adam Bar. Adam Bar is a serial entrepreneur, investor, best-selling author. And he is the best-selling author of this book, Unleash Your Financial Powerhouse, Practical Steps to Money Mastery. And the beautiful thing that I like about Adam, I mean, he started a career in the financial industry after a devastating injury, really, which left him unable to speak for many months. And yet he also was able to do other things that require his voice, that require his voice and his talent other than what we're talking today. And I feel that his being, his presence, dealing with different disciplines, plays, and just filling the soul, food for the soul, gives him a better understanding of how to handle everything. Welcome, Adam. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely. It's my honor. Thank you for being here. Adam is a financial advisor, and really what I like about Adam that he's really focusing on shifting your perception, the relationship with money. So Adam is a financial advisor. He got this book out and best-selling, and I didn't read the book yet. I will. But I read a few of it, and what I noticed, as I say, is that you focus on the relationship. So in a way, it's not just practical things of how to do what to do. It's kind of like to being a psychologist almost.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that individuals deal with when it comes down to money, and you know, I've had the fortune to sit down with thousands and thousands of families and individuals and entrepreneurs. You know, some that are just maybe starting their way and some that are super, uber wealthy and you know, what you would call the 1%. And what I realized throughout all of those meetings that they had a common thread. Mm-hmm. And even if individuals who had success in their lives, they had a certain relationship with money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that would make them organize their finances better. Or if people maybe didn't handle it properly, also they had a specific relationship with money. And, you know, a lot of it comes from maybe some of the things that we learned at home, maybe the environment. And we develop this relationship that becomes subconsciously apparent in our life with everything that we do with money. For example, we might say to ourselves, we cannot afford something, or we might say to ourselves, you know, oh, I don't care about money, or money is just for those people out there that are just, you know, grew up in wealthy families. And, you know, there's a lot of fear and anxiety around that. And we develop a story and maybe lack of confidence or overconfidence. And so, you know, it might not be you know, really loud voices. But when we really dig down to really understand why we take certain responsibilities or not taking certain responsibilities in our life, mm-hmm. we find out that it's actually the relationship that we have with money. Mm. So
how do you, so here, for example, now at these times, right, we are in these coronic times, and relationships are really coming up to the surface now,
yeah.
right? Because we are in this situation, we are kind of forced pushed, let's put it this way, pushed to face certain situations, and many things kind of can go out of balance in this kind of times. So in a situation like this, I mean, you know, we're talking now about financial stability and financial growth, but really to understand that the point is the relationship itself. So in this time when somebody is coming to you from a place of a need, you know, I can't afford it, or I can do this, or I can do, and there is the practical level that the person technically doesn't have money, let's say, to afford something. Okay. Somebody wants to come and work with you, for example, to really develop their attitude and their capacity and the relationship. But they say, you know what? How do you go from a place of a need in, let's say, in this thing of money, because money relationship is a crucial thing in everything. And there are some guilt issues, there are shame, there is shame, there is, you know, insecurity and all this. How do you start? How do you go to somebody? I mean, do you even, do people even approach you? Maybe people are kind of reluctant to even approach you, thinking that, oh, I can't even approach it. You know, I can't even approach you. How do you talk to somebody like that?
Sure. That's a great question. It's actually very common that individuals might think that it's too early for them to actually start a conversation about money.
Or too late.
Yeah. Or too late. Right. Either too early or too late. Absolutely. And, you know, we have a process, which, you know, I call it a discovery process, to really understand what is really the makeup or the DNA of the relationship of the individual or the family with money. Do they have fear? Do they have anxiety? Do they have a story that they tell themselves money is too complicated? You know, maybe they're afraid of math, and which, by the way, money has nothing to do with math. But, you know, we take them through, you know, an exploratory process where we ask some questions that really don't have much to do with money. For example, what would be the most important thing in a world to that individual or family? What are some of the biggest challenges that they have? What are some of the concerns that they have? What are some of the goals and the visions? What are some of the timelines that they want to accomplish certain things by? You know, what have they done? What behaviors have they subscribed to in the past? What are some of the fears that they have, or the anxiety that they have around money? And, you know, all of those things really gives us the narrative on how we could really plan forward and reverse engineer the goals that they have for the future, working with organizing their finances better, really working on their behaviors if they were not saving or if they were not investing, or maybe they have lack of education. And that's not something to feel bad about. It's absolutely not good or bad or right or wrong. It's just what is. And then we start like really, you know, watering, if you will, or grooming their mindset of abundance around money so they can start moving with no guilt or shame towards the future that they want for themselves, and without having too much fear. And we start taking responsible act to really achieve the goals that they have for themselves, whatever the, however big the goal might be, or however small, that doesn't really matter. But, you know, if we don't take the steps, and if we don't clean up our act, and if we don't organize and have some sort of a framework, it just, we want to achieve those types of goals and objectives.
So when somebody comes, a family now during these coronic times, and they really want to, because what is happening after this closure, I mean, many places are kind of open to the public, but in LA, we're still here until I think the end of July. And so many who will go back to the workforce afterwards are really kind of not just starting from point zero, but maybe even starting from like a few steps back, because they didn't have an income. Right. They didn't have a way to maintain and to participate in investments, or, and now they're coming to the workforce and they don't have, let's say, anything built. So they may not even be able to spend money on issues after the corona, because now they have to catch up. So it's, do you say that even this catching up mentality is kind of a stumbling block?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, money is attracted to organization and proper management, right? The economic situation today isn't something new. This has happened and will happen again in the future. And
it happened worse. It was worse already. We know.
Yeah, yeah.
We had worse
times. And so we as individuals, we cannot dip into buckets all the time that are only set for emergency. We got to build other buckets, which are opportunity funds and also financial independence funds. So at least three different buckets that we can dive into whenever there is a catastrophe or whenever there is an opportunity. For example, this situation for a lot of people might be a catastrophic situation, but for those who plan, this could be an opportunity situation because a lot of businesses that are struggling and they're going out of business are being bought by individuals who did have money stashed aside. And now they can buy, you know, businesses in wholesale price. So they can buy stocks in wholesale price. And so preparation brings opportunities. And so, and if you didn't do it so far, that's okay. This gives you an opportunity to do that moving forward. So how do you do that? There's a lot of programs today that enable you to really take advantage of maybe, you know, preferential lending opportunities or, you know, different types of business support systems, whether it's from Facebook, whether it's, you know, Verizon has a grant. There's all kinds of small business types of opportunities and also unemployment. You know, a lot of people maybe that are unable to work right now, but they can get unemployment that now might be extended. So there's always options. It's just finding out what the options are. And also not relying on only one streams of income. There's two types of, you know, money lanes, if you will. There's the first part is making money. And then the second part is keeping money. Mm-hmm. Right?
Keeping it.
Yeah. Making money is the opportunity to make more than you spend, right? You know, it's a very simple equation. If you make more than you spend, and you put that aside and you keep it and you invest it so you can have compound interest more than the inflation, then you'll end up ahead, right? But if you don't make more than you spend, or if you spend more than you make and then you don't get to keep it, you know, the math doesn't work in our favor. And so what we work in is kind of seeing where the leaks are, either on the keeping money or on the making money. And then we start organizing it. So either helping them make more streams of income, and then if they make streams of income and then keeping their money, then we trying to optimize it and help them make even more money in the future.
So I just want to clarify that there may be people listening that are not keen in the financial jargon or lexicon. So if we're talking about certain things, just maybe expand on it, like compound interest. So when somebody is making more money and keeping it, that difference. So just to explain that, if you can go over that, what is compounded interest and so forth?
Sure, absolutely. So Warren Buffett is one of the biggest investors in the world. Is worth billions and billions of dollars. Is the owner of Berkshire Hathaway, and he owns Geico. He owns many companies, including some in Israel. And he says that the magic in finance today, in money today, is compound interest. And compound interest, to give you a visual, is just like a snowball effect. So if you take $100 and you earn 10% on that $100, it becomes $110. Okay. So next year, when you earn money, instead of just earning money on the $100, you're now earning another 10%, for example, on $110. And the next year, you're earning money on
the $110 plus the interest that you got.
And so the snowball effect is really accumulating at a rapid rate. And that is also gives us an opportunity to really calculate how quickly we can double our money. And that's something that is called the rule of 72. And the rule of 72 allows us to calculate, for example, if I make 7%, so every 10 years, that means I will double my money, right? If I make 8%, then I'll make it in shorter time. If I make 12%, I'll make it in shorter time. Mm-hmm. So it's basically taking the percentage and the years and dividing it by 72, which gives us how quickly we will double our money. Why is it important to make our money work for us and earn compound interest? Because the value of our dollar goes down every single year. And it's usually between 2 to 4%, depending on the industry. Mm-hmm. And so that means that about every 20 to 23 years, we will need to double our money to have our money buy us the same things. Meaning, if you remember how much cars used to cost, if you remember how much houses used to cost, if you remember how much gas used to cost, even 10, 15, 20 years ago, you'll see that it was costing us a lot less. But it's not really that it cost us less. It's because the dollar was worth more. And therefore, we needed $100 to buy us something that worth $100. Today, we need $200 to buy us something that was worth $100 in the past. And that's going to continue to erode in the future. So if we don't earn money, that means we're losing the value of our money. We get what's called negative return on our money.
So basically, what happened 10, 15 years ago, I mean, I remember in the States, 10, 15, the gas was like in certain places, like 80 cents or something.
Right.
You know, but the ratio between the... So you're talking from that perspective standpoint of how to look at what cost us. So it's how, it's not that we couldn't, that we paid less. Practically, it looks like it.
Yeah.
You know, right. On the surface, it looks like we paid less because technically we did. So this is the simple view. So you're working on shifting that perception on not that it cost us less, but really what the money, how the money was working and the value. Because in the ratio of how much, let's say, for example, gas, just that comes to me now. From 20 years ago to today, the amount of how much the gas went up is far from the cost of living going up. So you can see that the cost of living probably didn't go up as much as the gas went up.
Right.
Which makes everything appear more expensive, it is, because I'm not making the same amount of money I made 20 years ago, and I'm spending more money than I spent 20 years ago. Do you explain that to somebody with four children and a family now in this time that they're running like with the chicken with their head cut off?
Yeah.
You know, and how do we do? What's the first step today? People in the corona, people that are really in... What do you think is the first step? I mean, is it something to cut away from how they spend or how we spend? Is it selling things? Again, it may be coming from a perception of a need. But how do you break that cycle in a time like this?
Yeah, absolutely. Just let me give you another example also for the value of money. So I think it will illustrate it even further. So imagine we have 100 people and each one of them is getting a dollar, right? As the money, as their budget. And then the federal bank prints another $100 and distributes that into those 100 people. So, technically, people will have $2 in their hands, but in terms of a percentage, they all own the same percentage from that pool of 100 people. So because there's more money in circulation, you know, they have more money, but in a percentage-wise, it's exactly the same percentage. You see what I mean? So it's exactly working in this way. Whenever the Federal Bank or Federal Reserve prints more money, yeah, there's more money in circulation, but the value of it goes down. And that means we need to spend more to buy the same things. And that's kind of like, I wanted to kind of give an illustration of it.
Yeah, yeah. So what happens in inflation?
That's exactly what inflation is. Yeah, that's exactly
so
what
it is. So you're spending more and they're printing more and the value goes down. It's like somebody who, there are only two stamps. I remember I heard a story from a rabbi, Zamir Cohen, and he was talking, he was giving the example of this guy that there were two stamps in the world and each one was worth millions. And he had one and he bought the other stamp and destroyed it.
Yeah.
So now the only stamp that he had is double than even if he had two stamps.
Right.
So it's kind of that. Tell me, so do you think, we hear a lot about, and I believe that we are, especially during this time where there is a change, a shift in every aspect of our lives during these times. How do you think about the currency? You know, because a non-sustainable currency is almost like passé, starting at the end, tail end of it. And we see more, even now, the collaborations and co-creations. And really, there is more a different approach. And there are many, there are talks, I've seen, there are communities that are using sustainable communities that are self-sustaining, which leads the question is, is this currency going to shift?
Sure.
And how is this playing into all this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I will curtail that with what you asked earlier as well. You know, we have to be very well diversified. And diversification is just a fancy word of not putting all of our eggs in one basket. So what that means is that we have to develop not only reliance on the system and the government, but also reliance on ourselves, because we have our best interests in mind. We want to take care of our family. We want to take care of our community. We want to take care of each other, right? We talked about Ve'avtala Chakamocha, supporting one another, right? And one of the ways to do that, right, if we have a job, for example, is maybe creating a side hustle. And that kind of goes along with the keeping money and making money, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to create another lane or two and another opportunity for you to make money. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of different ways that you can do it. There's skill income, which means if you have certain skills that you can contribute and add value to other people, you could probably use some of that in today's global economy and, you know, bring value to other people that would pay you money to do the skills or to provide the skills that you have. So we have to kind of like develop those additional lanes or additional avenue other than just relying on one lane or on one revenue stream, which is a job income, which is different than skill income, right?
Yeah.
And
job is kind of skill, but you're dependent really on.
Yeah, you're dependent on somebody else. Yeah, a skill might be like, for example, like a teacher, for example, they have an opportunity to educate individuals based on a tutoring structure that is outside of their employer's environment, right? Think about it, you know, what you do, for example, you help people heal with a unique skill that not a lot of people have. So you can do that, you know, even if you had a job, you can do that and offer this to the entire world today, you know, based on offering this to people through the internet, right? So there's a lot of opportunities today that we didn't have in the past. And if we really focus on the world of abundance, then we really find those lanes and opportunities to create additional revenue streams for ourselves. Maybe you do a course for somebody. Maybe you teach someone else how to do it. There's so many different ways, and people can find out something that they like, whether it's a hobby or something that they can earn money from, on their free time, and that will generate or make them more money that they could use that either for saving, or they can use that even for necessities and need in times of today.
Mm. So many I hear that are saying, oh, no, I'm going to sell, I'm selling stuff, or selling this, or making money by selling stuff and selling stuff. And I heard that you want to make money, don't sell things.
Yeah.
In the sense of selling your own whatever you have to try and, why is that not a good idea? I mean, it can't last forever, obviously, because there's so much to sell. But it's a good way to start something. No? I mean, would you advise to people that come to you and say to you, listen, you know, our family is not in a position to do so, and they don't have really a viable income. Is that something that you find yourself recommending to start getting the ball rolling?
Yeah, you know, anything that is dignified and has integrity and someone could make a living, right? We say in Hebrew that, you know, there's nothing that is too shameful to earn a living for yourself and your family as long as it has integrity and dignity,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we kind of want to understand what is the person is passionate about, what is their vision, and then through that, you know, discovery, we really find different opportunities for that individual or individuals to earn money. Sometimes it could be sales. Sometimes it could be referrals. Sometimes it could be commissions. Sometimes it could be just collaborating with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different ways. And there's no right or wrong way as long as it is beneficial for the individual or the family. Like today, for example, there's, you know, Amazon and there's eBay. There's things like that that a lot of people don't even have merchandise that they have to hold in their storage.
Right.
In their, right?
That's
and they
right.
just do something called drop shipping and they mm-hmm. just broker between two different, you know, between a buyer and a seller, and they make their commission. Or the difference in between. And this is all based on computer. And so that's just one example, but there's so many different things that that you'll be surprised how today, you know, I was talking to somebody about, you know, if they had something that they sell for example, for $500, and all they need to do is sell it for 1,000 people, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you sell $500 for 1,000 people, that is a significant amount of money. For someone that could be life-changing. And what if you did this once a year or once every 6 months or once a month? And when you talk about the global environment and the global opportunities to sell 1,000 people, $50 a month, which will make $500 or $600 a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Times 1,000, that's $500,000. And a lot of people don't make that today. So imagine, you know, there's a lot of different ways to make $1 million. And this is what I kind of help my clients really expand their mind if they're not in that threshold that they don't make $1 million a year. So I start like really creating numbers and metrics for them to say, here, if you sold $500 a year to 2,000 people, that's $1 million. If you sold, do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we now find 1,000 people in the world to sell them $500, right? Or a product or mm-hmm. service or a course or whatever that might be. Or how do we add value to somebody that they'll be willing to give us $500, right?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like the expansion. And, you know, and we go beyond the disbelief because some people don't believe that they can do it, right?
Oh,
So we have to work on that, and we have to like expand that abundance mentality and show them how the possibilities can work for them.
Yeah, no, that's great. It is. I hear you. It is hard. It is hard to come out of a certain loop, you know, when we are in a certain loop and it is hard to come out because, you know, when you, it's like when you close the door on your thumb, right? Your entire body is a thumb.
Sure.
Your entire body is in pain. Right. It's not, this is fine, I'm fine. No, your entire body is the same thing. So it's when in a certain situation, especially in a dire situation, it's kind of hard to get out of the, well, I guess on the other side, you know, the when things go to the head and it's, you know, over a confident, which is like really kind of fake. It goes into, you can't, also in that space, it is hard to come out of the fictional notion that it's all because of me, because of me, because of me. Because I believe that it's really, like you said, like the attitude, and it's not just the attitude towards money, but it's the attitude. Let's say you are successful and you are successful in that department and you receive money and you get money and you make money and everything. It's how the relationship to money is also after you make, when you make the money. It's not the relationship before you make the money.
Yeah.
Right. So here's a question. Did you work with people that, or somebody that you worked in a successful place where they were able to make and then they lost it?
Absolutely. I mean, even I'll give you my example. You know, you read in the beginning of the show about my journey and how my voice box was crushed. So
yeah, so you'll share with us in a few, but yeah, go ahead.
So, you know, that was a very, very rough time for me. I was pretty successful, making seven figures a year as a 20-something years old, having a whole bunch of stores all over the East Coast. And then one day I played basketball, someone elbowed me and crushed my voice box. Mm. And I found myself in a hospital with tubes in my throat. And now I can't speak. And even though I saved some money, not having health insurance, because when you're young and you don't think that anything can happen.
Nothing can happen. Yeah.
Nothing can happen, right? You're Superman. And so, you know, surgery after surgery after surgery. Wow. So over 13 surgeries to count and still counting, really teach you that you're not invincible and that now you find yourself in a situation where you have no money. And you have to start everything from scratch, where it was, you know, inconceivable at the time. You know, I even thought, you know, in my 20s that I could probably retire or you know, dedicate my life to doing good in the world in other ways, right? And I woke up and find myself actually, you know, beginning, you know, actually before beginning, right? Mm. It's like, you know, now how do I restore that dignity and when I say dignity is
in your eyes.
Yeah, in my eyes, is the belief that I deserve to and you know, because this is for people, some people don't believe they deserve to do well financially, you know, and you know, that's actually how I got into the financial world. And I realized that even though I was very successful before, but I really used my strong suit and I kind of like forced an outcome. I worked really, really, really hard and, you know, didn't sleep at night. It's like working like 14, 16 hour days to like generate that kind of income. And, you know, I learned that because I was so afraid of going back and kind of like having the same financial situation as I was growing up, which was very, very tough. Mm. Where today, you know, the way I approach it is like, you know, not running away from what I don't want to have, but moving towards what I want to have with the way of like having peace at home, you know, shalom bayit, and spending time with my family and, you know, like really spending quality time. But you know, so how do you do that? It's all a mindset and it's all a discipline. And, you know, planting seeds little by little by little by little, changing that mentality and changing the outcome and putting little money aside for the future, having that earn you money and developing additional streams of income, the combination of this create something that is really extraordinary. Mm, mm. And that's a very common thing with the super successful people that I work with. You know, many of them were not ones that grew up with a lot of money. In fact, most of them didn't. You know, even if you look at some of the wealthiest people in today's what you would call the 5% or even the 1%, they're not old money, they're new money. You know, I have younger people, they make, you know, significant amount of money, you know, some of them seven figures a month, right? And 3, 4, 5 years ago, there were not even, I mean, some of them are in their 20s, right? But they kind of like take advantage or leverage the power of the internet and the global economy. And they provide a service that is, you know, adding value to a lot of people. And little by little by little, to a large population, they are able to make, you know, money, you know, that is really significant. And anybody can do that today. This is, but first you have to believe that you can do it.
Are there exercises, just came to me, are there exercises that one can do, for example, I mean, does it help? Let's put it this way. Or can it just to, you know, when you go into certain financial programs, they give you demi money to play with and investing and stuff like that. Is there a system? I mean, do you talk about this, like a system for each, for people at home during this time, just to practice also if they don't have, or also just to create a make-believe type of thing? Is that helpful or is that?
Super helpful. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, one of the early books that I read was, and I talk about it in my book, it's called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what, you know, what you were saying, that the words become power, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we have a concept that we talked about, think, say, be, that, you know, what we think becomes what we say, and what we say becomes what we do, and what we do becomes our habits, and our habits become who we are. And so first we have to really get ourselves to a place of awareness, like, what do we say to ourselves subconsciously when we face an adverse situation? When we want to buy something, and do we say to ourselves even simple things? Oh, I can't afford it, right? Mm-hmm. So a simple exercise of when that happens, when we recognize it, is instead of saying I cannot afford it, is saying how can I afford it? How can I? And that's like begins an opening. And it seems like really, really minuscule difference, but it starts an opening that it's extraordinary. And so reading books like this, like Think and Grow Rich, even Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know, my book, Unleash Your Financial Powerhouse, The Automatic Millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there is actually a game by Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's like Monopoly, but it starts getting people to play with money and investments and get themselves accustomed to a mindset of abundance and the language of, you know, abundance and possibilities. And then they can begin to really start a positive dialogue with money. And I think affirmation is extremely important to really start, like, you know, rebelling, I call it rebelling against the internal voices that are taking us down, even though it's our voices, but, you know, but we got to rebel against it because it's not a productive voice for our future.
Yeah, it's many times these are patterns. These are how we grew up. This is growing up in families. You know, in Israel, many families are not able and living on a certain level and growing up in a culture that predominantly wants to keep you back, you know, it's like, oh no, it's a whole different mindset. It's a whole different mind. But again, here you're focusing, and this is what Adam is focusing, is on the relationship, and it is the relationship with ourselves, really. It is the relationship with ourselves. I can talk from personal experience. I can talk from other people that I work with experiences. But it's really a relationship to ourselves, and to start feeling confident and good enough to receive and to ask. And it's just wonderful. Tell me about your journey a little bit. I mean, first of all, Adam was also Mr. Israel, right? You grew up in Israel. You're born in Israel. He was Mr. Israel.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Listen, you know, everybody has their thing. That's cool.
That's right.
And then did you stop that because you just decided you wanted to do something else, or was that part of the accident?
That was something that I learned. You know, I grew up very, very Orthodox. I grew up Hasidic, mm-hmm. which is ultra Orthodox.
Yeah.
And, you know, my father, may rest in peace, was Amen. Really giving us a lot of extraordinary sets of values. But we didn't grow up with money, and, you know, I didn't have, you know, like I rebelled at that point, and I went into bodybuilding. I went through bullying and abuse, and I rebelled, and I went into bodybuilding to protect myself. And
you were bullied?
Yeah, I was
bullied. You were bullied, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, hey, welcome to the club.
So, you know, but you know, it's always challenges that brings us the biggest opportunities.
Yeah.
And so I took that challenge, and I wanted to do something that I could defend myself and stand up for others as well. And so I went into bodybuilding. And through that, I had a mentor that really helped me understand the value of being disciplined and really doing something in a consistent manner and having a goal. And, you know, and the becoming the number one in the country was one of the goals that I had at the time. And, you know, fortunately, after a lot of hard work, you know, at the age of 19, I became Mr. Israel. And I decided to come to the United States to try my luck here in entertainment. After going, I went to school, Yoram Levinstein, which is the performing arts school. And then I ended up in New York at the age of 19. Yoram told me to come to New York and try my luck. And I did that. And that's where my injury happened.
So you were like you were a Broadway performer, right?
Yeah.
You were actually a Broadway So
yeah.
So you were playing actually in some serious plays.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I know because Adam is a very, very talented guy. I mean, we're talking with him about financial and really our relationship to money, but it's his relationship to everything because he's doing bodybuilding. And I met Adam here in LA when we both played in an Israeli production, state comptroller.
Yeah.
It's called, and we ran here beautifully. We had 9 shows. It was a blast. It was
yeah.
a blast. And Adam was great.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And, it's all thanks to Ori. Ori did a phenomenal job.
Ori did a great job. I know. She pulled out things from people, you know.
Yeah.
I was looking at you as you go, and the first thing wouldn't come, like if I would see you on the stage, the first thing wouldn't come that you are, you know, dealing with finances. And because many times people that I see that are dealing strictly with finances, investments, and this, the life is kind of surrounded around that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's kind of like everything is, oh, how do I, do, should I do this? But if I do this, this is going to affect this money situation.
That's
so
right.
I'm not going to do this.
That's right.
It's almost like it's changing our relationship to money so we can make it, but also some, not everybody, that are keeping and are in a financial stability, it's almost like they have the other side attitude kind of thing. It's almost like the, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
the,
absolutely.
And really that's the most important, the relationship and the relationship to people. So you came to New York.
Yeah.
You did, how long were you in the Broadway business?
I was there probably about 3 or 4 years and, you know, along the way, I opened a bunch of businesses. By the age of 27, I had about 50 employees, and we were generating a significant revenue from about 20 different locations all over the East Coast.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and then that's where my injury happened at the age of 27.
So, what do you think? Do you think, I mean, being spiritual that you are, do you have an idea or kind of a sense, or what kind of meaning do you make for?
Yeah.
The injury that you had?
You know,
is there?
You know, I have to tell you, I have an extraordinary amount of gratitude for my father because he, when I was young, he always told me to, you know, not really focus on material things and really focus on the reasons and what's behind what's happening. So, you know, in the beginning, you know, human nature, we get very upset and we're, you know, we're angry because we think about, oh, why did it happen to me and what have you, right? And it's a natural thing. Yeah. And today I can tell you in retrospect that this is the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, people say, oh, wow, you know, this was devastating. You came to America, you had a dream to become a star and, you know, you're making a lot of money and you lost everything. How could you say that? But, you know, my journey was to inspire and empower people in different ways. And, you know, I wouldn't have met my wife if that injury did not happen, because I came to Los Angeles to have surgeries here by a specialist in UCLA. I wouldn't have gotten into the financial world trying to teach people how to avoid adverse situations like what happened to me. I wouldn't have gotten more connected with the spiritual side of it. I wouldn't have written the book. I wouldn't have been so involved in like altruistic and giving back to the community. Like today, that's what I focus a lot of my time in, like teaching entrepreneurships, going to environments of people that are underserved areas, being involved in scholarship funds and rotary clubs and stuff like that.
Cool.
All of those things would have not happened at all, because, you know, as a performer, the energy and the investment is very much inward. It's self-development, it's self-investment.
Yeah.
And I think the universe and the, you know, the creator, the universe, God, whatever you want to call it, you know, gave me a beautiful gift and a wake-up call to discover how can I do more outward investments and really bring more light to other people and really work on a lasting legacy, if you will, for not just for myself, but for other people in the community. And, cool. And for that, I'm super, super grateful.
Well, so, thank you. I'm grateful that you are here and that you are bringing all this and encouraging for everyone. And you know what? We are out of time. But you've given us and everybody great tips, and great tips to just how to look at things, and not necessarily tips of A, B, C, D. But one of the tips that we got out of here practically is to start even practicing demi, like, as if you have monopoly money, and to start organizing everything and to start playing with it, just to get a sense of organization and management that will draw the right, that will draw the energy of financial closer. So Adam has the book. Can you show me the book behind you instead of me? There we go. This is the book of Adam, Unleash Your Financial Powerhouse. I will put his Adam's link. What's your website, Adam?
It's www.rtbfinancialgroup.com.
rtbfinancialgroup.com. I'll put it in the post also so people can see that. Adam, thank you for the encouragement. Thank you for the energy. I wish you all the health, blessings to you and your lovely wife and your dog and everyone, and that you continue to help and empower and encourage people. And for you, all of you, I send you much love and encouragement to try something, especially if you are with your family and there is somebody who supports you in trying something. Give it a shot. Yeah. Adam, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you. My heart too. Have a wonderful week. Create what you speak. I'll see you soon.
See you soon.
We are.
You're listening to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak, with Ilan Azulay, only on LA Talk Radio.